Welcome to another Crime Cast by Revamp. Revamp stands for Remember Every Victim and Missing Person. You can catch us on Facebook at Revamp, Remember Every Victim and Missing Person, or on our website at www.remembereveryvictim.com. Now, Revamp was formed with the sole purpose, or the original purpose, was to bridge communication between law enforcement and the victims' families. I have been a victim advocate for about 20 years, and I hear the same thing over and over from families. We just can't get answers. We don't know what's going on. We can't get a return phone call. And that was really the case with Whitley Renee Cluck. Now, Whitley Renee Cluck was found shot from a gunshot wound in her head on November of 2019. And by all accounts, she was happy, motivated. She had a job ahead of her. She was excited about it. And the next thing they know, they get a knock on the door from the Crawford County Sheriff's Office saying their daughter has been found with a gunshot wound to the head. Today, we have Tom Honeycutt, who is our team coordinator with Revamp for the Arkansas team. And we also have Whitley Renee Cluck's mother, Angie, here. And everybody that knows this family just loves this family. And originally, this case was brought to my attention by someone in law enforcement. And he didn't give any explanation as to why he wanted Revamp to look at it. But he did hand it over and give us the name and contact information to look into it. And the more we dove into it, the more questions that Revamp has. And we have not had an easy time dealing with LaFleur County. Now, we have a new sheriff in LaFleur County, and we're hoping that will change things. But it's not going to go back and undo things that were not done or overlooked in this investigation. But at the very least, we do hope that the sheriff of LaFleur County will relook at this case and try to answer some of the questions. And if he can't answer them, maybe he can find out the answers. But today we have Tom Honeycutt and we have Whitley Renee Cluck's mother, Angie Cluck, here. And so we're just going to dive right into this case. It's a local case. It's only 3 years old, but it's a very interesting case. We get a lot of calls from families who have lost a family member to suicide. And a majority of the time, everything does point to suicide, and the coroners do a great job. So does law enforcement in doing the initial reports and vetting the witnesses or anyone that's connected to the case. But that's not always the case. And Whitley Renee Cluck is one of those cases that we feel like strongly it needs to be looked at again. So let's go straight into Angie Cluck, who is Whitley's mother, and let her tell you the events of that day that led up to her daughter's death.
Hi, and thank you. Well, Whitley was 20 years old and she had a car wreck not far from her house, and she spent 35 days in ICU. She was told she would never walk again, and Whitley is so strong and amazing. She overcame it. She learned to rewalk. And then one day she came to us and told her dad and I that she wanted to start driving trucks. So she got the means together and she went to truck driving school and had been driving over the road for about 9 years by the time she passed away. Then on this particular day, she was heading back out on the road, which she had started her own company. That was a hot shot company. And she had did all of her LLC work herself, got it all put together to build her company. And she was fixing to head back out on the road, and her boyfriend at the time was going to go with her. And this is the week before Thanksgiving, and she's going, "Mom, you know, can you make his grandmother some of your cranberry jelly for Thanksgiving?" I said, "Sure can." She had asked me about donating a gift certificate to a fundraiser they were also doing for the boyfriend's brother that had been involved in a bull riding accident. And I said, "I can do that." And then we were talking. She was telling me, "Well, I'll be back either Wednesday before Thanksgiving or Thanksgiving morning, but I will be back here on Wednesday." And so I said, "Okay, baby, that sounds good." And she went and loaded her truck, come back in, just like she always does, gave me a hug, a kiss. "Love you, Mama. See you next week." And out the door she went, and this was about 3 in the afternoon. And that was the last we basically heard from her. And then about 10 o'clock that night, we got a knock on the door that it was Crawford County Sheriff's Office to tell us that our daughter had been shot in her truck at the boyfriend's driveway.
So she was actually making plans for the holidays. When she left, she was making plans for the future. Everything seemed to be fine. Everything seemed to be good between her and the boyfriend, right?
Yes. She was even making plans to have a bonfire for New Year's Eve and do a cookout with friends. She was already planning that far ahead. Well, I had already went to bed. My husband answered the door, and he's the one that actually spoke to the sheriff that came to the door. And then he came in there and woke me up, and he said, "Angie, I need you to get up. Something bad's happened." And so I went in there, and I was just looking at him, and he had tears in his eyes, and he had told us about Whitley being shot. And, of course, I just started screaming. I mean, that was my baby. And when we actually talked to the LaFleur County, they were telling us how we needed to come get her pickup. They never kept her pickup. They didn't keep any of her electronics, any of that. And we had a friend that went and got her truck. And he told us that there were things that were questionable at the site when he arrived. And kind of went from there that the friend of ours winning our truck was one that brought me back her all of her electronics and stuff. And we were just shocked that they didn't keep her phones, her computers, nothing. So we don't even know how much really investigating, and I'd make call after call, and it took them 6 months to rule her as a suicide. But my sons actually saw the truck and cleaned out the truck, and he said there was so much inside the truck that did not make sense. Can't tell that it was ever fingerprinted, which I'm sure it wasn't, because he said there was no powder residue anywhere. And all of her blood, and she was right-handed, was pulled in the middle of the truck, not towards the driver's door like you would suspect, being right-handed.
You're not aware that they even checked the cell phone for any text messages, incoming calls, outgoing calls. You're not aware of anything that was done as far as looking at the electronics. Now, you got all those back. And you still have those. Those are secure, so those could still be tested. But as far as the truck, they turned the truck loose that night?
Yes, and then they taught us before we ever got in the truck or messed with the truck to have our insurance company come out and look at it. So we never even seen inside the truck or anything. The insurance company automatically totaled her truck. And like I said, my son and one of his buddies went over there and pulled her fuel cell off and got all of her belongings out of it.
I can understand your frustration. And this case was actually referred to us originally, and we looked at the case, and Tom took the case and ran with it. And so Tom's here, so let's talk to Tom and get a little bit of background on what Revamp has done on that case and where we're at today.
Thank you, Patty. We found that really the first thing that needed to be done is we needed to know what the sheriff's office had done. And since the case was closed and ruled a suicide, we were making requests for the complete investigation file under the Oklahoma Freedom of Information Act. Now, the first thing that we discovered was that there was quite a bit of disorganization in the sheriff's office, because by the time we had come along, the sitting elected sheriff had retired in December, and we're talking November 18th when Whitley's death occurred. So shortly thereafter, the sitting sheriff resigned, and the chief deputy or under sheriff was named to run the department. And then, of course, there was to be an election held to replace the existing sheriff under his tenure. And the undersheriff announced that he was going to run for sheriff, and another candidate announced that he was going to run for sheriff. And so by the time we got to this in September of 2020, the election had been held, and they had elected the outside candidate, and the inside candidate, who was acting as sheriff, resigned. So the acting sheriff resigned. He was a career employee of the department, and the elected sheriff had to be sworn in. So we walk right into a new sheriff, a new department. A lot of people had left because of the turnover in the sheriff's office, and our request got ignored for several weeks. Now, under Oklahoma law, the response time to an open records request is deemed to be prompt response. There's not a day or date established that the agency has to respond, like in Arkansas. But they ignored us, and finally delivered us what they had, except for the scene photographs, which were always critical for you to review, and we would have assumed they took pictures inside the truck to demonstrate, you know, what they saw when they found Whitley. So eventually we got some of the materials, not all the materials, and we objected to what they failed to produce, and we tried to get a succession of people involved in Oklahoma legal system to do something about it, which they did not. But based on what we were able to review, we found this to be a deeply flawed investigation. There were aspects of the investigation that were not done, they were done poorly, or have been lost. You know, when we made our original request, we got what we thought was the complete investigation file. Well, again, the photos were missing. Scene photos would have been important for us to look at, but we didn't receive them. The investigating officer, the detective or investigating officer, interviewed key witnesses, but he didn't document anything with a written statement, nor did he construct a clear timeline of the events. And the investigating officer did not record interviews with family members during the almost 4 months before the medical examiner's ruling. Family members say Whitley Cluck was not depressed, and they do not accept the suicide ruling. The sheriff's summary does not explain why, after an apparent argument with her boyfriend, Whitley Cluck might be so distraught to commit suicide. From all our talking to her friends and family, she was happy. She was engaged in her new business. She had spoken to her boyfriend the night before. They were together, and he agreed to go on this trip with her. She was going to the boyfriend's mother's home to pick up her trailer so they could get on the road and do this job. And she was supposed to meet him there. In fact, we looked through her phone and found a succession of text messages from Whitley sent to the boyfriend. You know, at 4:20 p.m., she texted, "I'm over at the trailer." At 5:09, she texted, "Call me. I'm trying to figure out what time to tell the broker." At 5:47 p.m., she texted, "Baby, where are you? We got to leave." None of the texts were answered, and this lengthy absence during the initial investigation is not explained. You know, the boyfriend did provide information to the investigating officer, but a lot of that we checked based on other interviews is just doesn't match up. You know, for example, he told the officers that he and Whitley had been in an on-again and off-again relationship, but the people we spoke to said that he had spent the night with Whitley Sunday, November 17th, and he left the next morning. He left about noon with plans to accompany Whitley on this hotshot job. You know, what he expressed to her was that he was concerned that it had been cold the night before and there was going to be a cold stretch of weather, and he wanted to get some things for his dog, who stayed outside, presumably. And so when he left Rudy, Arkansas at noon, he had time to go get that stuff, take it to where he was going to meet Whitley, and prepare the dog to go. And he wasn't there at 5:47 p.m. to meet her or to explain what he'd been doing for 5 hours, almost 6 hours. So that was a discrepancy in his statement. He also stated that he told Whitley that he didn't really want to go, and that she became upset and went to her truck and got in and slammed the door. Well, you know, we can't test this statement because the sheriff's report doesn't document the time that he left after this alleged argument and before he came back, almost 10 p.m. or so. There's a discrepancy here with what he was doing all this time, because they lived just outside of Spiro. He could have gone into Spiro at any farm store and gotten what he was looking for, or he could have even driven to Fort Smith and got what he was looking for and been back in less than an hour. He also told the investigators that Whitley was wanting him to get back together with her when he left Rudy at noon that morning, that same day, having spent time with her and having, by all evidence, gotten back together with her. Now, one of the things that he said also in his statement was that he was afraid of her because on a previous trip, she had kicked him out of the truck because he was accepting text messages from an ex-girlfriend. Our view of her phone and talking with other people tells us that this was not an ex-girlfriend, it was an ex-wife. There was specifically a text in Whitley's phone from the ex-wife basically saying, "You can have him, just tell him to come pick up his stuff at the house." That would have been about a few days before the November 18th, 19 date. He told the investigating officer there was a bunch of texts back and forth indicating there was a bunch of discord between his ex-girlfriend and Whitley. And by the only text that we have available, she was saying, "You can have him, just tell him to come pick up his stuff." Because even though he had divorced her earlier in the year, he apparently had been spending some time with her. So, you know, we've gone through a series of things that were said in a narrative, not in a witness statement. You would have thought that him being the last person to see her alive, the investigator would want to have a written witness statement in the file so that if he had to go back later and test everything that was said, he'd have it in writing, and that would be the start of basically impeaching his credibility, which was never done. So that proved to be actually that little technique about comparing facts versus the statement was suggested to us by a OSBI veteran agent who says that's the best way to catch somebody not telling you the truth is get them to tell you their version and then go back and verify it and question it and try and find facts that refute the facts that that person states. Those are some of the things that would have been fruitful to investigate, but there was a big gap between November 18th and February when the last entry in the investigative report is a call to Angie saying, "We're still waiting on results from the medical examiner's office." And so at that time, he said it was still a homicide investigation in February in his reports, but it very quickly returned by March into a ruling of suicide. And it's not really clear what the medical examiner based its determination of suicide on, because there was no information or witness statements in the police investigation file to show what her state of mind was. You know, Angie spoke about it earlier, about how up she was and excited. She had a job and she was getting ready to go, and she was making plans for the future. And then she has a little argument with her reestablished boyfriend, and she shoots herself. I think any investigator would want to know more about what her state of mind was, but he didn't interview anybody with a family to establish that. He seemingly wanted to get this off his plate and move on.
Well, the thing that I was concerned about is Whitley had purchased the gun. She had purchased it from her sister-in-law. And yet the gun, even though they had a transfer paper, the gun was actually registered in Katie's name. And Katie was not notified that they had dug into the use of the gun and if Whitley had permission for the gun or anything, since it wasn't actually registered in her name. And then I fought for well over 6 months to get her personal belongings back because they told me they would send her personal stuff back from the coroner when we received her body. And it took me over 6 months just to get her jewelry, her purse. And at one point, the coroner's office told me that no, they had sent it back. The sheriff's office were saying no, they didn't. I even had the funeral home we were using, they were trying to help find her jewelry and stuff. And it was just a huge mess. And finally, I had to kind of get hateful with the detective and said, look, she had a lot of jewelry. I need to know where this jewelry is. And after her father and I finally got to pick it up, they had also misplaced the gun. And we had to go back a few weeks later just to pick up the gun because they had misplaced the gun.
The issue of a gun or a firearm in any case that has the potential for criminal charges is you want to know how the gun got introduced into the mix. And you know from talking to Whitley and talking to Whitley's sister-in-law that she purchased the gun from the sister-in-law. The sister-in-law, I understand, bought that gun new from a federal firearms licensee. That in the United States of America is going to be the last piece of information that law enforcement can get their hands on. But you could have spoken to the provenance of the gun to the detective. They didn't ask any questions about the gun. They just assumed, it seems, that it was her gun because it was in her truck, and she was the only one in the truck when they found her. And that's, again, that's something that didn't get done. Would they have found her name on a registration of the gun? No, but they could have very easily understood how she came to own the gun and have the gun in her truck, because several other witnesses told me when I talked to them, she got the gun because she had concerns for her safety. She was on the road. She was traveling on the road. Her jobs may have been short or they may have been longer, but she would be on the road in her truck and, you know, stopping in truck stops and making deliveries. And so, yes, she had a gun. She obtained it legally. There was no question about how she obtained it. And none of that was reflected in any investigation to explain how did this gun get here. Well, again, during the period of this, there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of uncertainty at the top. And again, that led to people leaving when either they thought the new sheriff wasn't going to keep them on, or the new sheriff didn't like them, or they had a better offer someplace else. The work didn't get done. And what we'd like to see happen is, no matter what the outcome is, we'd like to see these issues resolved, because going forward, the farther you get away from it, the harder it is for you to resolve these issues that raise these questions and that cast aspersions on the determination of this case as a suicide. People move on. Law enforcement is got a full caseload, but it's important to the family. It's important to her friends. It's important to, in my view, it should be important to the community that they have some real certitude, real certainty that this is what happened. And we would only know that by making sure they covered every discrepancy, every statement that was made, that they could know that that was a verifiable statement. And in fact, those statements aren't even in the file.
So there's a lot to this case, and there's a lot of unanswered questions about this case. And that's really what Revamp and the family is asking, is for answers to these questions. And it just appears to me that when there's a death of a young person, that it's better to go ahead and get all the documentation of that scene that you can. That way it stands up and answers for itself. If it's ruled a suicide, there will be things that have been presented in that case file to indicate that it was suicide. But as Revamp has looked at this and has talked to the family and a couple of witnesses, we have come to the conclusion that she was in a happy mood. She had plans for her job. She had plans to come back for Thanksgiving. It took months before LaFleur County ever did actually make a ruling, or the medical examiner make a ruling on this. Now, what bothers me is the medical examiner only has the information that is furnished by law enforcement. And when you look at this case, you don't see that there's much information. I think it would have been very helpful to have had statements on her state of mind when her parents last saw her and Rudy, and the person that was going on the trip with her. Maybe somebody else that she had ran across. Maybe she stopped and got fuel. I would think that she would fuel her truck up in anticipation of a long trip. But there's a lot of unanswered questions in this. And really, how Revamp got involved was, like I said, we were referred this her name over by someone who's in law enforcement in the area. They were concerned. They thought it needed a second look. And I can't find that we've really gotten any more answers. We've actually gotten more questions through this endeavor than we have answers. So what we're really pleading for is anybody in the LaFleur County area that may have information on the death of Whitley, that may have seen her that day, that may have known her boyfriend or her boyfriend's mother or a neighbor or a friend, anybody that has information about Whitley that could shed some light on this, or anybody in law enforcement in LaFleur County, we plead to the sheriff to, you know, just give us some answers in this case. You know, answer the questions as to, you know, what led up to your decision in ruling it a suicide. You have to have had something to base that upon, and we don't see that. So obviously you have more than what you've given us, or you have inside information that maybe is not documented that would shed some light on this. And Angie, I know when your daughter left, she was in a good mood. She was anticipating the holidays. There's nothing that indicated that she was in a suicidal frame of mind. Now, I know I hear people all the time say, and professionals say, you know, you can't always judge that. But this girl was making plans. She had obligations. She had responsibilities, and she took those very serious, correct?
Absolutely. And the thing is Whitley was already booked on this load, and she was needing to get to where she was going to pick the load up. She's never been late with the load. She's never missed a load, nothing. She took her job, what she did, very seriously, and she loved what she was doing. And she was so excited to start this hot shop business and everything. I mean, it was... it definitely was not Whitley. When Whitley had her car wreck and was learning to re-walk, I saw when she'd get in a mood and in depression and stuff. And Whitley was none of that day, none of it. She was happy-go-lucky, ready to move into the new year, everything.
So this is one case that is very dear to our hearts, and for many reasons. She was very young. She had her whole life ahead of her. There's no indication within a few hours before her death with her parents that anything was wrong. And the boyfriend had spent the night with her. They seemed to be back together. They were planning on going on this trip. So if anybody has any information or any insight to this case, please reach out to Revamp, Remember Every Victim and Missing Person. You can catch us on Facebook at Revamp, Remember Every Victim and Missing Person, or at www.remembereveryvictim.com. We also have phone numbers on there you can reach us. We just beg anybody that has any insight on this case to please reach out to us. And we're going to leave it at that. Angie, I am so very sorry for your loss. I truly mean that. We're not going to give up. We always end this podcast with a little line, and I truly mean this one. Whitley Cluck, we will not forget.